welcome to Season 2, Episode 11, also known as Episode 43, of the Retro Game Club podcast. I'm Hugh, and joining me still in quarantine is Rob.
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy, to put it lightly.
Yeah, yeah. So what have you been doing with your newfound free time?
There isn't any. Trying to, every day is Monday for me. So, I happen to be in the kind of healthcare that you almost can't do telemedicine. So it's kind of a scary time. So I've been, tasked to, try to code something that we could kind of work. So, yeah, I've been, I guess you could say I've been catching up on my least favorite language, JavaScript. Mm-hmm. So what have you been up to? Mine isn't very fun.
Mine isn't fun. I know. JavaScript is also definitely my least favorite language to work in. Active language. I'm not going to talk about like the one time I had to learn how to do monk programming for a project. That's a real programming language. You can look it up. So let's see. I've been making the most of Comcast lifting all their data caps. So out on archive.org, for some reason, there are complete sets of like Sega CD and PC Engine CD and Sega Saturn CD games. Don't know how that's legal. But I've been, again, I'm not like Mr. Advocating piracy because most of the things I'm downloading are things I already have a copy of. I just don't want to go through the effort of ripping.
Mm-hmm.
And been just filling in like, I would say like hoarding, but getting a few games that I want to have in my collection that I haven't been able to get a physical copy of yet. Or that it's just, there's no physical copies available. Like a lot of these demo and sampler CDs that came out.
Or stuff that is just impossible to get or too much money.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that's been a little bit of my free time. I speaking of demo or sampler CDs, I posted, just because I'm a little bit bored in the evenings, once I'm done with work, the, a review of some PC Engine CD samplers. So these are things that I've bought over the years. Mm-hmm. Because I have a weird fascination with sampler CDs. Mm-hmm. Mostly because I think there's a lot of games that I like playing for 2 minutes and then I never want to touch again. And posted something called Hyper Catalog 5 and 6 Review, which is there was a series of samplers for the PC Engine in Japan called Hyper Catalog. And they were called that because they also contained a catalog, like a database of all games published for the system. So you could go in and like filter games by genre and price and publisher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're trying to find out what games are available, it's actually a good reference for like what games were made for the PC Engine CD. Mm-hmm. But then each disc would have like 4 or 5 game demos on it too. So the last two that came out in 1994, which is actually the year the PC Engine was discontinued in Japan. So as you can imagine, these are going to be kind of light on content because people weren't really making a lot of PC Engine CD games then. It's kind of like, here's the last things that we're trying to rush out before the system mm-hmm. is discontinued.
Cool.
So that was kind of fun. And I played through Saturday Morning RPG.
What did you think of that one?
I actually liked it, especially for the price. So this is one of these games that was on the Switch eShop for, I don't think I'm exaggerating, 19 cents. It was part of like some flash sale last year mm-hmm. around Christmas time. I definitely paid under $1 for it. I may have paid under 25 cents. So it's actually pretty good. I mean, it's not a real long game. Before I started it, I actually went out to howlongtobeat.com because I really wasn't in the mood to start like a huge involved game. And I saw that the average playthrough time was between like 5 and 7 hours. So I think I came in right around, 5.5, 6 hours on it. It's a really fun game. It reminded me a lot of the battle system reminds me a lot of Paper Mario.
Okay.
So if you like the Paper Mario style battles, definitely a good game. It's set in, sort of a fictionalized 80s city with kind of over the top references to 80s pop culture. But yeah, fun little game. If you can get it for a couple dollars, it's definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it got pretty good reviews.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think overall the reviews have been pretty positive. I don't know what else the developer has done. It was good enough that I would go and check out other games by the developer if they were a good price. You know, like, see, on Steam right now, so you can buy it right now on Steam for $7. So that's the regular, I guess that must be the regular list price. You know what? It's worth it. I mean, like I said, it's a 7-hour game, so it doesn't seem like a bad deal at all. Oh, yeah, so these guys have written a lot of other games. So I'm going to have to go check a few of these out and see. Just because I enjoyed the style. I like the artwork. I thought it was a good game overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even know it was on Switch. I thought it was just on Steam. So, yeah, I might need to pick that one up.
Yeah, I think they might have ported it kind of hastily because I did... The game did lock up once on me. Like, it just kind of went to, like, a gray screen and wouldn't respond to anything. Luckily, I saved a lot, so I'm wondering... I don't know what's involved in porting like a PC game to Switch. I'm assuming there's a lot of tools that make it somewhat easy, but there's some condition. It was like right when a battle was starting, it just died. So it's, I think so far the only Switch game I've had that just completely bombed out.
What game is next on your list? Do you know
I don't know. See, the problem is I have a couple of games on pre-order that now may or may not come in. And they're not super retro games. Like, I pre-ordered Persona 5, which I think was supposed to be here Monday, but Amazon just sent me an email saying, oh, we have to deliver important stuff first. You know,
TP and life Lysol. Essentials. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I guess I have to wait to get Persona 5. And the thing is... This is going to sound really bad. Like, I probably wasn't even going to start it until the first patch was released. That's what's bad about this. Like, there are a lot of games nowadays I like. But, yeah, there's a whole lot where I'm like, well, I do want to start that game. But I bet you there's going to be, like, a 500 gig patch in, like, a month that fixes some game-breaking problems. So I should probably just wait.
Yep, modern gaming.
Yep. And I pre-ordered Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I have no idea when that's coming out. I thought it was supposed to be like soon, but maybe not.
I think that was the demo, which I have not played yet.
Oh, demo. Okay, yeah. I'm not going to bother with the demo. I just pre-ordered it.
Yeah, yeah. Play when it comes out and all the bugs are fixed.
Yeah, that's the other one. Like, I bet that thing's going to have at least a 2 gig update.
Yeah. Per chapter.
That thing looks huge. Yeah, I probably have to delete some stuff from my PS4 to even play it.
Well, should we dive into news? We actually got
let's get some news. A good number. Yeah, let's go through some news here. Sorry. some reason I'm very hyper today. So Summer Games Done Quick. It's an event I really enjoy watching. Usually if it's streaming in the background all day. It's been preemptively canceled just because they don't know when this whole situation is going to end. But in a couple of weeks, they're going to do an online version called Corona Relief Done Quick. And it's going to be a weekend marathon, April 17th through 19th. And you can watch it live on Twitch. Obviously, they won't have people there in person. But I really enjoy these events. So I will definitely be watching this and donating.
Yeah, yeah. They raise a lot of money for good causes.
Yeah. This is going to... I'm not familiar with this organization. It's called Direct Relief, who deliver emergency medical supplies to people.
It's... very timely.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a little different than who they usually are backing. But that's fine. It's a different charity, but they're doing it, you know, for a specific reason, obviously.
And then up next, War Stories, How Prince of Persia Slew the Apple II's Memory Limitations. So Jordan Mechner wrote Karateka and Prince of Persia for Apple II, and then later was ported to everything. But this is a great video interview of him on Ars Technica. He's just a charming person, really, but who I would love to get on this podcast. But he has the original VHS tape that he used to film his brother so he could do the rotoscoping for Karateka and Prince of Persia. And he talks about, like, the memory limitations in the Apple II and just... the whole idea really between for both games, even though this focuses on Prince of Persia, and how it kind of came out a little bit late in the Apple II's life and it was almost forgotten about, but then porting it to other systems really gave Prince of Persia a new life. And just a fantastic interview. Again, you know, this is on Ars Technica, It'll be linked in our show notes. It's probably on our Facebook. Definitely go watch this. He's just a fun dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was couple years ago, I guess, geez, 8 years ago, time really flies. He posted the source code for Prince of Persia for Apple II to GitHub, which is very, I wish all the old like Apple II developers would dig up their source code and post it just for historical reasons. Cause you know, if you ever want to do a remake of the game or whatever, there's really no way to do it without,
the assembly
without the original code. I mean, I know like we just saw, there's this limited run games announcement about, I'm sure you saw it for, Panzer Dragoon remake. And I guess that is not based on the original source code because Sega didn't have it anymore.
Yeah, they lost it. It's been gone.
Yeah. Gone. So it is a ground up remake of Panzer Dragoon. And at least with Prince of Persia, if you want to go through and get the Apple II assembly code and bring it up to some other system, you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So very cool article. The next one, did you check out the video of this next article?
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, so a Super Mario Brothers 64 smoke effect bug fixed after 24 years. So apparently they used the wrong, I don't know what it was, pretty much just flag in their code where it used the wrong effect for when Mario gets too hot or falls in lava in Mario 64. And I always thought that it was either a bad artistic choice or a system limitation. I always thought the smoke, the black smoke in Mario looked bad. And turns out it was a bug. They just, almost like a typo, really. So this is a patch that only fixes that one thing. It literally like flips a bit in the code. And it looks great. It looks like smoke. It looks like something you'd see like in Mario Odyssey. So it's pretty impressive. And it's something that was supposed to be that way for 24 years.
Yeah. How do you know it was supposed to be that way and not Nintendo at the last minute saying, make that look less explosive?
I don't know.
I mean, it certainly looks better, I think. But Nintendo would just sort of like randomly, I don't want to use the word censor because that seems a little too harsh here. But sort of like randomly tone down content, sometimes for no discernible reason.
But it's still, it almost looks softer now with the new way, the fixed way.
I don't know. I think it looks more comical. You know, it looks more like something you'd see, you know, when Wile E. Coyote got set on fire.
The original way looks almost like soot, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm a fan of the new way, and I downloaded the patch, but I haven't played it yet.
You really can do a playthrough of Mario 64 just for better fire?
It's on my list to go play through again. It's been since high school, since I beat it. So I'm going to do it anyway. If it's not this way, it's going to be on my 3DS. What do we got next?
All right, so missed demake for Apple II. this is a cool project, or someone, hopefully they don't get a takedown letter. But they're converting Myst to an Apple II game, and you can see they've got a whole little blog here. The whole thing has to take 40K of RAM and fit on a 140K floppy, and they talk a lot about, you know, downscaling the graphics to be able to do that. And it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a demo up right now.
Yeah, it does look really good. Now, like, I wrote this tooling I wrote to do, like, image to Sega Genesis image conversion. I could easily take all the stills from Myst and convert them all to Genesis images in a minute now. I kind of thought about doing it, but then I'm like, I got like 100 other projects I'd rather
and
do.
You don't even really like Myst.
I don't. I like the idea of Myst.
It's a tech demo.
I really do.
That's all it is.
Yeah, I like the idea of Myst, and then every time I try and play it, I end up not liking it.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. But back in the day, you had to fill up those CD-ROMs with something. So, And so this guy's filling up his floppy disk with something.
I don't know about that. I saw this one this morning, and chose not to put it on the show notes, but then you did.
So. Okay.
Yes, I'm going to talk about it.
Oh, yes. Ryan Reynolds to star in upcoming live-action film adaptation of Dragon Slayer. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm a Ryan Reynolds fan. I think he's funny. And I am a Dragon Slayer fan. I think I am. I buy it for every system. And yeah, I think this could be funny. I like the Sonic movie. I liked Detective Pikachu, even though I'm not a Pokemon fan. So why not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel strongly about Ryan Reynolds one way or another. I think I get him confused with like three other actors all the time.
But yeah, it's probably easy to do.
So, I just, for me, Dragon Slayer is a cartoon. Like, I just, why not just make a cartoon?
I mean, it should be that also, but Ryan Reynolds really, he really puts his all into passion projects, and I think this is one of them. So, so I have high hopes for this one. I'm ready to be let down.
Yeah. So if you're really bored right now, over on OzRetroGamer.com, that's A-U-S, not O-Z, AUSRetroGamer.com, they have a link to free retro gaming books you can read while you are in isolation, such as the A to Z of Dreamcast games and the a couple of the books in the Fusion Retro series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of fun to flip through them.
Yeah, I actually have not seen the A to Z. I've seen the A to Z of Dreamcast games before, but I did not read that. And I think I will click download right now on it.
Yes.
Again, since there's no data caps anymore.
I may be wrong.
Proving that data caps were never necessary in the first place.
That they've actually done that. Someone somehow did some metrics and they found out that, yep, Comcast wasn't saving any money. They were just doing that to charge you more.
Yeah, I am shocked.
So a lot of news this week that I'm very fond of. This one, Star Wars Episode 1 Racer, will include LAN multiplayer on the Switch. So they redid, or I guess remastered, Episode 1 Racer for the Switch and PS4 and maybe other systems. But on the Switch, you can have LAN multiplayer, which is very cool.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, because obviously if you have multiple Switches in the house, which I assume most families, not most families, but a lot of families do, or if you're listening to this podcast and you have kids, you probably own multiple Switches at this point.
And there's actually a bistro by my house that Wednesday nights is Switch night. So you bring your Switch, okay. You connect to their guest wireless and play some multiplayer games. It's kind of a good idea, and this seems like a perfect use for that.
Yeah, now I bought the Limited Run Games reprint of Star Wars Episode 1 Racer for PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Limited Run Games, of course, sends me daily emails with their updates about how they're handling games, which is, I guess, good of them, but you know, I get the point. So I still haven't really played it yet, and it's funny because I always claim this is like my favorite Star Wars game.
You and I say that a lot in this. Best thing to come from the Nintendo 64, probably the best thing to come from the prequels, just in general, including the movies themselves. It's just a great, the play control is great on it, and it even looked, the original version looked great. So, yeah.
All right. Hardware review of the PC Engine Mini. So I guess in Japan, you can get the PC Engine Mini, but it is not shipping to the US yet because...
Yes.
Delays.
So, there's a long article on Nintendo Life that, to break it down, it pretty much says that, this PC Engine, which one is this?
It's based on, it's the Japanese version, which is modeled after the core graphics.
Yeah, the core graphics. So, the core graphics mini is not much smaller than the actual core graphics because that was already small. So the rundown of this is, it's great. If you're not already a TurboGrafx fan, you might be searching for game. You know, there might be a few duds in here for you. And They should have just left it the original size and let you put in a Hue card to it. Hue card, however you pronounce it. That would have been killer if you could play real TurboGrafx Hue cards in this.
Yes. I mean, then you do have to worry about regional differences. So that could have been a manufacturing difference because the Japanese and U.S. versions are not interchangeable.
Oh, yeah. Their pins are flipped in a few spots. Yeah.
So that you didn't end up making two different ones and blah, blah, blah. And obviously putting a CD drive in this, I guess, would also be cost prohibitive is my guess.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a pretty positive review, but just a little nitpicky. But I'm excited for those who eventually come in the mail. My Amazon shipment for this says December 2020, I think. Which I think that...
Yeah, that just means they don't know.
Exactly, yeah.
Sega's new mascot is son of Sega's old mascot. So is this Alex Kidd Jr. or something? Or
no, so this confused me because it's very Japanese specific. So in Japan in the 90s, when we had the Sega Scream, pretty much, as our... on our commercials in the States, they had Segata, which was this guy, like a karate gi, who would like find kids in an alley and beat them up and scream Segata to them. And he's 74 years old now, and for the 60th anniversary of something, I guess, Sega, they put out some commercials in Japan with the guy's son, who looks like a... 13-year-old J-pop star. So definitely not as cool, definitely not as edgy, but it's a thing that exists. So so there you go.
Yeah, I still don't think I understand it, but all right. Alex Kidd Jr. would have been better. Shadow Man Remastered.
Yeah. Coming out in 2021. I never owned this one. How about you?
No, that's why I had to stop at the intro of the title.
if apparently a lot of people like this game, I don't remember it, so I'm definitely gonna have to pull up my Nintendo 64 EverDrive and try it out. But apparently the updates are 4K and anti-aliasing and other post-processing effects and just better particle effects, and it's gonna come out with. Xbox and PS4 support. Okay. Cool. Yeah. If there's any Shadow Man fans listening, yeah, please email us. Let us know if we should play this game. Email at retrogameclub.net.
Yeah, I like you, I've mostly heard positive about this game. I mean, looking at it, it's kind of got that, like, creepy graphical styles. It kind of looks like something that I think I would like. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, my Nintendo 64 backlog is pretty bad. I should talk about that sometime. When the system was declining, you know, in the late 90s, early zeros, I picked up a lot of games on clearance, and I really haven't caught up on them yet. I mean, I have some games that I know are bad. Like, I know there's a Shadowgate game on Nintendo 64, and I bought that on clearance. And I generally like Shadowgate games, although I've heard this one is not the best. It's like every Halloween comes around, and I'm like, oh, I got to play some old Halloween games, and that one just keeps getting bumped down. So maybe this year will be the year I finally play Shadowgate on Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
ASCII Art and Permadeath, the history of roguelike games.
Yeah, another Ars Technica article and video. Just talking about what roguelikes are and how you can make entire games with ASCII art. So if you're interested in that, we have a link for you in our show notes. It is pretty interesting. I only got halfway through it, though.
And then last but definitely not least... Adventure Pi, portable Raspberry Pi arcade machine. So this is a project to put Raspberry Pi essentially in a lunchbox.
Yeah, with a arcade stick, buttons, and an LCD all built inside. So you open it up like a clamshell and you start gaming away.
Yeah. So this unfortunately is not for sale. I looked, the first time I saw this, I said, okay, here, take my money. Like, how much do you want for this setup? But no, he's not selling it yet. Maybe there'll be a kit or something one day. Like, this would be too, like, I couldn't manufacture this. So you have to have, like, you know, you'd be able to work with, like, metal and stuff.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Very cool looking hack, though.
You could probably take this thing camping if you wanted to.
Yeah. Why would you bring... I don't know. I haven't gone camping in a long time, but something about bringing video games to camping seems wrong.
Yeah.
Although I guess if you get like a day like today where it's just like pouring rain nonstop, you probably want to have something to do.
All right. Topic of the week. We interviewed Ray from Arcade 816. And here you go.
Here you go. Hey, so today we're talking to Ray from arcade816.com. And if you haven't seen them before, they make these really amazing cabinets. But hey, Ray, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So we're all just here under dual lockdown and tornado watch. I think you're in the Chicago area too, and it's a rough weekend for us. So why don't you tell us about the cabinets you're working on?
Well, I probably about 2.5 or so years ago, a couple friends of mine opened an arcade. And I said, wow, I'd like to do that. That'd be cool to do, you know? So then about 3 months went by, and I saw them struggle with the day-to-day of finding old CRT monitors, repairing old CRT monitors, buttons going bad, boards going bad, all the ins and outs of running an arcade. And I said, I don't want to do that anymore. but it stuck in the back of my mind like a splinter. I'm like, man, I would love to do that, but how could I do it and not have to deal with all that? How can I, how can I do it in a lazy way, you know? And I was like, I just kind of out of the blue came up with the idea. I'm more of a home console gamer at heart anyway. Don't get me wrong. I love arcades. I've been to a million arcades back in the 80s and 90s. But, most of my gaming, the core gamer in me is home console. And I said, you know what? It'd be a great way to do the arcade. I could use all modern components. I mean, save for the system itself. Everything else would be modern. We could use LCDs and, you know, the technology. When I first decided to do this, the technology was just appearing. Things like the OSSC upscaler and that kind of stuff was just starting to appear when I decided to do this. And I'm like, man, this is like meant to be, you know, because this kind of thing is like, it would have been really expensive to do, you know, in like even like a year before I decided to do it, you know, it would have been like, oh my God, there's like, this is tremendous undertaking. And now it's like the community is like really churning out a lot of great stuff to make it possible for us to use these old consoles on modern equipment. And I'm like, I can build modern equivalents to those old arcade cabinets that, that keep failing and needing work and everything. And I have tremendous respect for the guys that actually do run, you know, a proper arcade. It's like, oh my gosh, the work that goes into this is just the upkeep. You know, I mean, Doc Mac has 750 plus games of Galloping Ghost Arcade. It's like, how do you, it's like unfathomable to me. So I'm like, you know, I'll do it this way. And then not only am I filling a niche that doesn't really exist to my knowledge, but also it'll just be a lot easier. And then as it turned out, as I started putting these things together, it's anything but easy. You know, it's a lot of work. It was a lot of, a lot of looking into, you know, how do we solve this problem? How do we solve that problem? A lot of logistics, a lot of research, figuring out how to do it. So the initial idea, was that they would be wall mounted. I would open this space and we would have all these arcade cabinets wall mounted. You know, it would be only the top half of the cabinet and we'd wall mount them all. And I think that would look, you know, awesome and amazing. But the unfortunate thing is when we designed them, we sort of over engineered them. And, you know, even though it's only the top half of a cabinet, even though it's only the top, the front 2/3 of a cabinet, it's still pretty heavy, you know? So I actually have the good fortune of having an architect in the family who I asked about this. I said, based on the weight of this thing and the construction of it, could we wall mount like, you know, 10, 20 of these things down a wall, you know? And he looked over it and he's like, well, no, because not only would you tear all the cabinets apart, but you'd tear the entire wall down and your landlord would probably be upset about that. And, you know, so I said, okay, well, what can we do to resolve this? Well, as it turned out, We put our very first prototype that we built was the Sega Genesis. You guys may have seen that one.
Yeah, it was the first one I saw.
There you go. So my buddies who opened the arcade, it's Pixel Blast Arcade in Lisle, Illinois. When they opened the arcade, they're like, hey, why don't you bring that? We're going to Midwest Gaming Classic. This would have been 2 years ago, Midwest Gaming Classic. We're going to Midwest Gaming Classic. Why don't you get your cabinet finished and bring it? And I was like, oh, that'd be cool, man. Thanks. So I got the thing finished. We were about a week out of MGC, and they're like, you know, we don't know what kind of, like, if we're going to have a table or if we're going to have a place to put this thing. Because at this point, it was like a bar top, you know, a big bar top. And we don't know what we're going to do, but, you know, can you build like a table to set it on? Or can you build, like, do you have, I'm like, yeah. So I asked my my buddy that helps me kind of put these things together. I'm like, you know, is there any type of table we can build or something? He's like, I'll look into it. And then like 3 days later, he's like, okay, it's done. And I go over there and it's got, and he had this, that beautiful, that thing you've probably seen at the bottom of the Genesis cabinet with the cartridge slots in it and stuff. And I'm just like, oh my God, dude, what the? So I was like, this is amazing. So that's kind of where the idea of the base came from. It was just like a spur of the moment. Like, we got to throw something together. And, you know, so then it kind of became, well, now that we've got that base down there, let's open up that space where the cartridges are. And you've seen probably later the ones we built after that have the space opened up. We've got all the swag down there and memorabilia for, you know, stuff from that era and from that system. And so it kind of came together really organically. You know, I came up with the idea, and, you know, one thing sort of led to the next thing. And then, you know, here we are.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, I really like the looks, because, yeah, like you said, you have the kind of clear section. You can see the console. You know, they're all you're playing. And then I noticed the memorabilia section you added was a very nice touch.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was looking, I think in particular, like, you did a TurboGrafx one and a Super Nintendo one last year that looked amazing. Because you also then, you're doing the artwork to look like the original console. So the cabinet looks like, you know, a taller version of the console itself.
Yeah, you know, basically it's just a matter of, like, when I'm designing them, I'm like, I try to get into the mind of the guy that did the USA marketing for each one of these systems, and, like, you know, the guy that, get into the mind of the guy that did all of the design of the consoles. This is a little bit of the US marketing. It's a little bit of the original Japanese console designs. You know, there's a little, just finding bits and pieces of stuff that look like, you know, if this company made an arcade cabinet of this system, what would that look like? And that's kind of what I've tried to visualize. So it's a lot of Google image searching for, like, the original system boxes, and looking at the design of them, and looking at, you know, when you look at, especially a system like Neo Geo or Super Nintendo, they're just very 90s inspired. And, you know, just trying to get into the minds of those people, like, what were they going for here? And what, you know, and then, you know, churning out these things. And then the control panels are just like, they're a visual representation of the controller for that system. So you're kind of like, in a way, trying to trick people into thinking, well, I'm not playing with the original controller, but dang if it doesn't look just like the original controller. So yeah, I'm okay with it.
Advantage that's next to you. Well, it's a control panel, but it looks like a dual advantage. It looks like
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. It's like, you know, I designed them. So of course I think they look awesome. I'm like, man, you know, if this needs to be done, this is the way that it needs to be done. And this is like, you know, but you never know what other people are going to think, you know? So when I go to places like MGC or talk to guys like you and hear, yeah, dude, it does look good. I was like, oh, thank God. You know, it wasn't a waste of time, you know?
So do you start with old cabinets, or is the cabinet design your own too that you,
We built these from the ground up. So these are, we don't use anything old, everything's new. And that was kind of the idea behind it. We don't want to deal with, you know, anything old breaking on us, you know, apart from the system itself. But, you know, to use old cabinets, there's the chance that, you know, they're rotted or they're, you know, they need work, you know, so we build these from scratch, and then it's a lot easier. I have, super talented team of friends that I've known since high school that helped me out. You know, I'm the idea guy. I come up with the ideas. I come up with the art designs. And then my buddy Olaf comes up with, you know, he goes into 3D rendering and, you know, designs how they can. I'm like, you know, we have like a director producer relationship. I'm like, make it look like this, you know, and then he's like, all right. And then, you know, he brings it into 3D. So the beauty of that, and, you know, my advice to anybody who's thinking about doing anything in this vein, learn how to use the 3D program or know a guy that used how to 3D program, because we are able to see these 100% complete before we cut one piece of wood or print one piece of art. And it's like, you know, we've actually gone back to the drawing board. We've designed a bunch of pieces of art and we're like, man, individually, these look fantastic. And then we put them in 3D on a cabinet and we're like, no, you know, we're able to try out different colors of tea mold on each one, you know, to see, we can go back. And then it's like, yes, perfect. That looks awesome. And then that's 100% complete. And we haven't cut a single board or, you know, wasted any paper on printing or anything like that. And then once we've got something we really like, then it's like, okay, now let's start cutting wood and printing artwork and doing all these things. And we've still had to do reprints even after that, because once you print them out, sometimes the colors change. And, you know, I'm a perfectionist to the point of where my friends all hate me. I'm like, I gotta, you know, let's print out a different piece for this. And I want people when they come into Arcade 816 to have like the best possible experience, I guess. I'm just like a kind of a stickler for how they look. And, you know, it takes me a long time to build them because of that, you know, and people are like, you know, when are you going to sell these things? And when are we going to be able to, it's like, it's coming, it's coming. It just, you know, I need to do it the way that I need to do it. You know, I want it to be perfect.
Oh yeah. 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 And then I completely understand that. I'm not a perfectionist, but I understand the drive to want to get these things, you know, looking right the first time. So people aren't disappointed. I think what's interesting is like the game selection you've done for some of these, because obviously there's arcade ports, you know, Space Invaders on 2600 or Street Fighter 2 on Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But I know you've demoed like some games that were not originally arcade games that actually seem to work fairly well in this format.
Yeah. I've never really played anything that didn't translate well to this. Surprisingly, I'm like, you know, there's probably going to be some games that just aren't suited for, you know, being inside of arcade cabinet. And really the only thing that I've run into, that wouldn't work is like, it's genre specific rather than gameplay specific. Like, you know, we're not going to put in Final Fantasy 3, right? You know, it's like, nobody's going to stand in an arcade for, you know, 60 hours I'll save it and I'll come back the next day. Oh, somebody deleted my save. You know, it's just not practical. It's not going to work out. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that, is not going to work. But, you know, we put in, F-Zero in our Super Nintendo cabinet. And it's like, you know, that there, I mean, there's, you know, the later F-Zeros had an arcade port. You know, the Super Nintendo one, you know, it plays great. You know, I mean, the action buttons there, the L and R to tilt are right next to it. It's like, it plays fine. You know, Castlevania plays fine. Contra, Blaster Master, you know, we've tried so many different games. It's like, yeah, man, I have no problem getting used to this, you know, and that was a huge concern of mine, because it's like, you don't want to have this and then have people come in, because believe me, I love this hobby as much as anybody. I know how protective people are of this particular hobby, you know, and whenever I have a conversation with somebody, you know, they'll always come up and ask, oh, how are you doing this? How are you doing that? And how are you handling this? And I'll answer all their questions and they always walk away going, okay. All right, good. I'm just like, that makes me happy, because I, you know, the biggest sticklers, you know, I'm making them happy, and that's all I want to do is just make sure that everybody is happy with, you know, the end product.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, from the little bit of my plate, I have zero complaints about these, other than just wanting more of them.
Yeah. And speaking of which, you mentioned that you might start selling them eventually.
Oh yeah, that's coming very soon. The plan going forward is, and this is kind of exclusive, I haven't really told anybody about this, but the plan going forward is, we're actually going to sell these prototypes. I have four of them here. We have eight total. I have four here. We have four out in the world. Two of them at Pixel Blast in Lyle, another two at Yeti Station in Aurora. The four I have here are a combination of switching out some of the ones at the arcades, but four of them will get sold. And then that money will go toward the tooling we need to start mass producing them. And then once we have that tooling, we can start mass producing them, not only for the arcade space, but also for people to buy. Because when I first went to MGC 2 years ago, and then again last year, I was overwhelmed by the people wanting to buy them. And I had no idea that that market existed. I was kind of a noob coming into this, mm-hmm. and I just didn't know. So, you know, I'm opening this arcade, and I was like, are people like thinking that when I say I'm opening an arcade, they think I mean this machine? Like I was afraid that people didn't understand that it was a venue. So the following year at MGC, I added the word venue to the end, arcade venue, so people would understand. Didn't matter. People still were like, yeah, I understand what you're doing. I get it. I want to buy one. And yeah. I'm like, okay, I get it. It's not my fault. It's just that, you know, it wasn't a misunderstanding. People just want to buy these. They had no idea there'd be a market for that. But so many people are like, I can't throw my wallet at you fast enough. I'm like, all right. So I'm like, we got to get these things out in the world, you know? So prototypes go first. Then we afford the tooling to mass produce. And then we basically, you know, each one we sell, we can afford almost hopefully two of them, and then one for the arcade, one to sell, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you know, we'll move forward that way. So we've been generously donated a printer to print our own artwork in-house. So a lot of the stuff will happen in-house. It'll save us a ton of money, and we'll be able to finally move forward on this. And I couldn't be more excited, man. It's going to be pretty awesome. And I think other people are excited too, because, you know, people not only want to visit the space and play these, but people also want to buy them. So, you know, I want to make as many people happy as I can. You know, you can't please everybody, but hopefully I'll be able to please a lot of people. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So what other, I was probably one of the people that asked about whether you ever planned to sell them. Cause when I saw it, my first reaction was, I really want, I want like a 32X themed one for.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Awesome. It's in the works.
Yeah. Because there's so many great arcade ports on that one. Like it almost seems like the most logical system. Or like Sega Saturn, you know, something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, that's part of what I'm working on right now during this quarantine. It's like, well, I've got all this time to kind of be at home. So I'm doing more cabinet designs. I'm working on a 32X design. I'm working on a Sega CD design. What are some of the, there's a, like, oh, 3DO. Okay. There's like four or five new ones that I'm working on right now putting together. So once the artwork's all finalized, we'll bring them into 3D. We're also doing a brand new cabinet, which is it's a full height cabinet rather than the two piece with the base and the top part. We'll just have a one piece, you know, full height, and then if people, basically options for people to buy. You know, if you want, like, I have no use for the bar top, I just want a full height. We've got it. You know, we've got them. We'll have them without the art. We'll have them without the bottom. You know, a lot of different ways people can, you know, because we want people to have choices. You know, maybe you don't want this exact design, but we will hopefully be able to accommodate what you're looking for.
So the ones you've done, has there been one system that was more difficult than the others to get wired up?
Oh, as far as getting them into the cabinets. Well, each one of them has their own uniqueness as far as getting them to output RGB, getting them to work with the upscaler. We were using the GameCube with the Game Boy player to do Game Boy. And we just weren't 100% satisfied with the video output with the stock Game Boy player. So we're like, you know, what can we do about that? And then, you know, it's like I said, every time we try to go forward with one of these things, the scene kind of pops out one of these new devices. So then the Game Boy Consolizer came along and we're like, perfect, you know? So now we've got the Game Boy. So that was a little difficult. I am fairly good with a soldering iron, good enough to be dangerous, good enough to burn myself. So I got the Game Boy Consolizer. I set to installing it, spent about a half hour on it. And I was like, nope, give that to my buddy, Jason, who is an expert at that sort of thing. And, you know, he did that. He did the, we put the Unibios in our Neo Geo. We had to RGB mod the Super Nintendo Junior. So, you know, any of the systems that don't natively output RGB, all the Sega systems are just like kind of why we did the Genesis first, because the Genesis was the easiest one to hook up. You know, we just it was basically plug and play, plugged right into the OSSC, upscaled, no problem. The control panels are sometimes a little interesting to put together, because in some cases the hardware to run the controller is inside the system, which is the case with Genesis 3-button controller and Atari 2600. So you don't really have to do anything. You can just direct wire right to the control panel. But then others, you know, like Super Nintendo, Nintendo is, of course, you know, notorious for, you know, proprietary stuff. So they have proprietary chips in their controller. So we have to actually break down a proper controller, and then wire that. I guess they call it pad hacking. We wire that into the into the control panel. So we've got to use actual controllers, but we don't use actual Nintendo controllers. We use like third party, Chinese knockoffs, because we're as much a museum as we are an arcade. We're we like preservation and stuff like that. So we don't want to if we use a real controller, that's one less controller that's in the world. So we kind of don't want to do that. We use modern equivalents wherever we can. So
I didn't even really, it would obviously work because the Super Nintendo cabinet, from what I played, I thought was pretty perfect control wise.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I like that one. And I was impressed at the GameCube to get the Game Boy output.
It worked fine for Midwest Gaming Classic, but I'm like, if we're going to put this out in the world, I would kind of like a better option. So it was interesting. Right at MGC, there was a booth right across from us where they actually had a device that would go out of the back of the GameCube and handle it that way. And we were like, well, maybe we could look at it. The Consolizer came like 2 months later. We're like, that's perfect, because I love having the actual Game Boy inside there. Using the actual Game Boy console as the core of that cabinet is just, that makes me smile. That's really cool that we can actually have that. Like, having the GameCube in there, it's like, well, it's still Nintendo and it's a workaround, but having the actual Game Boy in there, I'm like, that's the way to go, because that's going to look great when people come in and see it, and that Game Boy Advance like sitting in there. Yep, it's actually coming right off of that system, so that's super cool.
So have you thought about 4-player cabinets ever?
Yeah, because we were actually running 4-player cabinets at Prince Arcades in Bolingbrook, and also Pixel Blast. We were doing Bomberman in the TurboGrafx cabinet at Pixel Blast. Oh, wow. And then we did, there's a recent ROM hack that came out, New Super Mario Land for Super Nintendo. And that's 4-player. So we were running that at Prince Arcades with 4-player. Now, the workaround for that is we've got 2 controllers coming out of the back of the cabinet, and then players 3 and 4 will just kind of hold the, the gamepad. Okay. So what I want to do absolutely is, have wider control panels where we can actually have, like, this is a dedicated Bomberman cabinet where we can run Bomberman games in it. I am definitely going to do, I want to do pedestals, a whole bunch of separate pedestals, and I want to do a 10-player Saturn Bomberman cab. I think that would be excellent.
Yeah, because you could use an HDMI splitter, right?
Exactly. So it's going to that'll be really, really fun to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, that would be pretty amazing. I mean, Nintendo 64 is another system that kind of comes to mind right away for some, that has a lot of potential of great games you could put in.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I would love to see a dedicated Mario Kart 64 cab.
Do you think you'll have any problems trying to put an analog stick in a cabinet?
It's funny. That's what I was just about to say. I interrupted you. I'm so sorry. I was going to say that, that's what we're working on at the moment, is actually trying to get how are we going to work the analog stick into the arcade cabinet? Is 8-way going to be compatible, or is there a way we can come up with a joystick that's going to be compatible? We're slowly getting that together. One of the reasons I actually didn't have a Super Nintendo, or excuse me, Nintendo 64 cabinet right out of the gate is because that's something we'll work on, kind of later on. Let's focus on the ones we know are pretty easy to do right now. And then once we get those all, perfected and we like the way those work, then we'll kind of start moving on to other stuff like, analog stuff. So then we're talking Nintendo 64, Dreamcast, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or like later Saturn or PlayStation. Like you could do Saturn and PlayStation with a digital controller up to a point.
Right, exactly. I mean, I would love to see a dedicated PS2 Gradius 5 cabinet. That'd be... it'd be fantastic.
So I my list here. So is that like your dream cabinet then? PlayStation 2, Gradius 5?
Oh my gosh, a dream cabinet? That's one I would like to build. Yeah, for sure. Because that's part of what we're going to do too. We're going to have all of these individual system branded cabinets, but we also want to do like just single branded cabinets. I would love to do a Shovel Knight cabinet. I would like to see... my buddies and I sat around and rattled off like a whole bunch of them, and none of them are coming to mind right now, but there was a whole bunch that we were like, it'd be cool to see a dedicated, Gradius 5 was another one. Like, I'd love to see that. There's a whole bunch of potential there for just dedicated cabinets to a specific game.
Nice. All right. So if people want to find out more about Arcade 816, where do they go?
I do most of my stuff on Facebook. So that's just facebook.com/arcade816. And I, if you search me out, it's arcade816, no space. Sometimes that tricks search engines and, you know, things like that. It's hard to find. But if you put a arcade space 816, sometimes it doesn't find me. So it's arcade816, no spaces for everything. Arcade816.com. I have a development blog there where I put up kind of updates on, you know, what I'm doing, you know, with the arcade, where we're at right now. Very, very soon, this is exclusive. Nobody else knows about this either. But because we're stuck in quarantine, I've actually started to work on podcast Arcade 816. So there's going to be, you know, we'll be able to, we're going to do game streams, gameplay streams. We're going to do just news about the arcade. We'll talk about, you know, the games we like, stuff like that. So that'll be coming down the pipe very, very soon too. So just another way to update people on kind of what we've got going on. Because people have been wondering, you know, what's happening. Really, the big focus lately has been just the Tuesday trade-in. I do, every Tuesday, I go to one of the arcades and swap out the games. And I do a live stream and I tell everybody about the game and, you know, unveil what we're going to do that week. So, unfortunately, Tuesday trade is not happening because of the quarantine. So, you know, I'm like, what can I do? You know, I just, I'm going stir crazy just sitting here not being able to go out and do that Tuesday trade-in. So I'm like, oh, do a podcast. That'd be neat, because then that way we can kind of, we can still be out in the world doing something and not just sitting here, you know, festering in our basements. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Of course, it's a good time to remind people that when this whole thing we're doing is over, please visit your local arcade or barcade. You know, help, you know, these places I'm sure are losing a ton of money right now.
Absolutely. You
know, they still have to pay their rent.
Yeah, so, for sure.
So help them out as soon as you can, really.
Yeah, you can actually go to any of the, you know, the Chicago arcade scene is booming, man. It's doing so good right now. And to lose that or any one part of that would be just a tragedy, man. So you can actually go to any of the Chicago arcades. They all have websites. They all have, you know, gift cards and day passes. You can still support them, you know, even during this time when, you know, we can't go out anywhere. You can buy day passes. You can, there's always ways to support, and good please idea. Do that to keep the arcade community alive, because, you know, I got to tell you, now that I'm in this and I'm part of this, you know, I got to tell you that every single one of the owners of every one of the arcades in the Chicago area is just really, really stand-up guys. They've done a ton to help me out. They've just been great supporters and friends and helpers. And, you know, I don't want a single one of them to lose, you know, what they've got, to lose momentum. You know, it's like, it's, there's a lot of arcades popping up in Chicago, and it's not a competition. You know, there's room for everybody, and everybody loves everybody else. And I'm just blown away by what type of people are part of this community. It's amazing. So yeah, please, if you can, help these guys out. We'd appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Just make sure you're healthy before you go there. We don't need to start this whole thing all over again.
Exactly.
Well, every episode we each pick a retro game to play for our listeners to play with us, and then, you know, send us feedback in email or Facebook or Twitter. And so we'd like you to, is there like a console or arcade or handheld game that's, you know, about 20 years or older that you'd like for a game club this episode?
Oh my gosh. Have you guys been doing any themes lately, or are you just pretty like random on what you choose?
Pretty random
mostly.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Do you have like ROM hacks and homebrew stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you guys have access to I'm just on a Gradius kick right now. Okay. Do you guys have access to the Gradius 3, the SA1 patch?
If it's online, we have access to it.
Then you do.
Oh, you mean the Super Nintendo? It was a ROM hack fairly recently. Is that the one you're talking about?
Okay, so Super Nintendo Gradius 3. A fella online reprogrammed Gradius 3 so that it runs on the SA1 coprocessor chip. Okay. So what that does is it eliminates all the slowdown in Gradius 3.
Yeah.
And the game becomes super, super challenging when you play it in this, you know, in this way. And I would love to see you guys do a gameplay of Gradius 3 with no slowdown. It's a fantastic, fantastic. I mean, it doesn't change anything about the game itself. It just gets rid of that slowdown, and it's a completely different game, because if you've played it a lot, your brain is actually attuned to the speed that it plays at, and you know when it's going to slow down. And I remember the first time I played it, I was just blown away by how different a game it is now, because I expected that slowdown to come, and when it didn't, I was like, oh crap, whoa. it's amazing, dude. So yeah, I mean, I would love to see a gameplay video of that, man. That'd be
so I see it's a free download. There's a patch on GitHub. So yep. We'll link that in our notes, and that'll be one of our games of this episode.
Oh man, that's fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
All right. Well, thank you again. And hope you have a very productive next couple of weeks, however long this goes on.
Oh, you too, man. And be safe. And man, I'm so happy to be on. Thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate it, dude. That's great.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks. All right. Hey, thanks again for joining us. If you haven't seen these arcade cabinets in person, they are more amazing than how they've been described.
For real. Definitely. We're going to have it in our show notes. Definitely check them out and give them a shout out, you know, see them at his next events.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't know that there were a couple arcades down in kind of southwest suburbs that he had these in already. Like, I knew he was working on a project to do like a dedicated arcade of these tile cabinets. I didn't realize there were some already out, like as prototypes that you can play at arcades. And it's not like you don't have to pay a quarter. These are all the arcades, you know, where you pay admission and it's unlimited free play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very fun interview. Very cool, dude. All right.
And now I kind of want one of these cabinets that has like a Final Fantasy game in it, because I think I'd lose some weight. You know, for having to stand and play like an 80-hour RPG.
Put a treadmill on it next to it or something, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Perfect. All right. Do you want to talk about Game Club games?
Sure.
Both current and future.
Yes. So mine was Metal Marines, and yeah, this is a Mindscape game from 1993 for Super Nintendo and Windows 3.1. And I chose this one because it is beloved to me. And we actually had an email or Facebook, I forget, requesting some DOS or 3.1 games. So I thought this was a perfect one to play. And Mindscape, you know, also developed Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. They did a port of Prince of Persia. They did, some of the Sim games, like Sim Ant, Sim Life, Star Wars Chess. So they have a lot of games under their belt. And so to describe this game, it's an anime-style game with cutscenes between each battle. And the battles are real-time strategy where it's two islands, your island and the villain's island. It's a bit like a battleship, too, where you don't really see what you're shooting at until you hit it. And then that kind of opens up kind of cells around that area. And you set up like any, what would those be called? Like any missiles, any air missiles and other defenses. And you have to knock out their defenses before you could actually attack their base. And the whole point is to blow up the enemy's base and then move on to the next island. And I like the Windows 3.1 version because it... If you can picture Windows, well, you have your window and the villain has their window, and the missiles you shoot, or the Metal Marines, which are like robot mechs that you could send over to destroy and stomp on some of their stuff, will fly between the windows, which I'd never seen anything before or after this do that in Microsoft Windows. So I thought that blew my mind back in 1990, whenever. And, on the Super Nintendo, it plays pretty much the same. I think it's a little bit scaled back. I played the Windows 3.1 only one this time, so I can't really remember. But I can't recommend this game enough. It's something that I usually wouldn't like, I don't think, and this one really got me. Were you able to try this one out at all?
Yeah, I played the Super Nintendo version, mm-hmm. and I had no idea what I was doing, and I was completely defeated in a couple minutes. So I didn't stop and like read the manual, which I guess I should have, but I didn't realize like there was like on your turn there's like a timer. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. I thought this was like a kind of a turn-based strategy game, so a lot of it was me like just trying to figure out what I'm doing, and then suddenly missiles.
It's real time, so you have to get going. You can attack each other at the same time, and yeah. Although if you send one of your metal marines to his island or her island, you can't do anything else until that metal marine either flies back or gets blown up. So
Yeah, I noticed that too, because they sent metal marines over to my island. And the game does kind of stop for a while they're busy destroying my city and me not knowing how to fight them back.
Yeah, so it's all about setting up the right defenses. And what could I say? It's strategy. So definitely, if you feel up to it, definitely try to get back to it.
Yeah, it looked really good. Like, it was a very nice looking game. I just would have to take like a couple hours to learn how you're supposed to play it.
So Zach, he posted this on Facebook. He did figure out that you can download the ISO from archive.org, and it works on current version of Windows and Wine. Okay. So it might be fun reason to actually use Wine. That's about all I have to say about that. Again, if any listener hasn't played this and likes strategy games at all, or has been looking for a DOS Windows game to play, I recommend Metal Marines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's a bad game. It just wasn't something I understood very well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, want to talk about yours?
Yeah, so I picked Freeway, classic Activision game for the 2600, mm-hmm. Inspired by Chicago's Lakeshore Drive. That's a fun fact about it.
Huh.
Yeah, it's because there's a stretch where it's five lanes each direction, and apparently the developer, while in Chicago once, saw someone attempt to cross Lakeshore Drive across five lanes of traffic, both ways, and decided that's a great idea for a game. And that's what it is. This is a race to 21 points between two chickens crossing 10 lanes of traffic. So it's a game that is pretty not fun as a one-player game. It's a game that... There's a few games that really are meant to be two-player only, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a huge list, but this is 100% one of them. Like, you cannot play this with one player and have any fun. So get your kids to play it, because I think your kids will actually think the game is funny.
That's a great idea, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, and they will, because the idea of a chicken getting hit by a car and surviving is pretty funny.
Yeah, it just knocked back a lane, right?
Yeah, you knock back a lane or two, yeah. I think you knock back one, but sometimes it chains into many lanes. And it's conceptually a little bit like Frogger, except you can only move up and down. There's no left and right, and you're just trying to race each other across the screen as fast as you can. So you get to their side, new chicken comes to cross the road. I don't know if it's the same chicken crossing over and over again, or if you have like a flock of 20 chickens trying to cross. I don't really know the whole like canon of Freeway. But that's why, like sometimes these Activision, it'll be included, like this game is included on every Activision collection, but sometimes it's on systems that doesn't make sense. Like it'll be on like a Game Boy collection of Activision games. And you're like, well, that's no fun. But you can play this on everything. I have the original game. I have it on 10 different collections for you name the system. And then of course, like Stella, you know, stuff like that you can mm-hmm. play it on. But you got to play two player. And it's just that whoever can get their chicken across 10 lanes of traffic 20 times wins.
It's 20. 20 is the number.
20.
Okay.
Yeah, is it 20 or 21? I don't know why I always think it's 21, like volleyball or something.
And so what happens when you win?
The game just stops. Okay. I mean, well, the scoreboard flashes. And you can keep playing, I guess, but you've won at that point. Hmm. Yeah, so it's 20. Yes, it is indeed 20. I don't know why I keep thinking 21. If a player scored 20 or more points on either road 3 or road 7 and sent the photograph of the chicken screen, Activision would send them a patch.
Huh. I bet those are expensive on eBay.
This actually seems like one of the easier Activision patches to get. Do you think? I don't think that's very hard.
This would be funny as a if you wanted a game idea to make in 3D, like if you're teaching yourself Unreal or something, to modernize this one in 3D.
So, I don't know how to price this. It's on eBay, the Freeway patch goes for about $50. Wow. Which is about mid-range for Activision patches. So, I should not have gotten in this rabbit hole, man. So, like, the spider game and Oinkers, not Oinkers, the pig game, Oink, those are between 20 and 30, whereas tennis is like 80 and pitfall is over 100.
Wow. Because everyone knows
pitfall. We definitely should have gotten more of these back in the day.
I didn't know about them back in the day. I didn't know about the patches until like the 2010s.
Yeah, I knew about them from like video game magazines at least. But my family didn't own a Polaroid. So like getting a picture would actually mean like you have your camera, which only has like 20 like my kids, your kids will never understand this. Like your camera has 20 pictures or whatever you can take, whatever's on that film strip, right?
Mm-hmm.
And don't waste those because it's like $2 to develop each one of those pictures or whatever. What did it cost to develop pictures? I don't know. Our parents were paying for it. I don't remember what the cost was. But I just remember, like, not wasting film was a big deal.
Yeah, so some of your Christmas photos might not get developed till the summertime because you had a few pictures left.
Right, because you had, like, 2 pictures left on there. Exactly. Yeah, and then you'd go to, like, the drive-thru booth and the guy that was really stoned would take your pictures and you know, all that whole experience our kids will never get to know. The drive-thru photo booth, they will never, ever know.
Yeah, that's funny. But, yeah, this is a quick game. You know, I have nothing much to say about this game. Nothing wrong with it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a very deep game. Certainly it's no Metal Marines.
Well, like you, I got killed, or at least run over right away, so.
Yeah. Yes. All right, want to tease what our next games are going to be?
Sure. Well, because of the interview we just did, mine is Gradius 3, preferably with the SA1 ROM hack that I will link the GitHub patch to. So,
is regular Gradius 3 on the Switch, on the Super Nintendo archive there?
Ooh, I don't know.
I believe it might be on the Super Nintendo Classic, right?
Versus Gradius is definitely there. Yeah, because I talked about it last week. Or didn't I?
Yes. Well, how can you be expected to remember something you talked about a whole week ago?
I know. A week ago seems like so long ago. Because every day is Monday for me until this quarantine is over.
Until this whole thing is over.
Yes.
I'm going to pick for my game WrestleMania the arcade game. So
I'm excited.
If you do not like pro wrestling, this is actually like the one of the best pro wrestling games because it is a more of a 90s one-on-one fighter than an actual pro wrestling game. Like a lot of pro wrestling games try to simulate the experience of pro wrestling, a fictitious sport. Whereas WrestleMania the arcade game is just a over-the-top one-on-one fighting game that plays more like a Mortal Kombat than it does a wrestling game.
And this was ported to everything?
Yeah, everything that was out in 1996 got a release of this.
Yeah, yeah. 32X and Saturn. And PlayStation and Super Nintendo. Was this arcade cabinet the one that had the big button? I forget what the button did. But there was a big button that would like light up. Or am I thinking of a different WWE?
I don't know if I've actually played WrestleMania the arcade game in the arcade.
Let me see. I'm sure there's a few of our listeners that are screaming at us right now.
It would not surprise me if it had like one big button. You don't need a lot of buttons to play this game to begin with. I'm looking at pictures of the cabinet. Most of the cabinets that were like modified Mortal Kombat cabinets with it.
Yeah, I can't find a good.
Yeah,
picture.
I don't think I've ever played it in the arcade.
No, I'm thinking of something different.
Okay. But yeah, again, not a series. We'll talk about it in another week. But yeah, it's a fun game. I think you will like it, even if you don't like pro wrestling. And of course, WrestleMania, I guess, somehow is happening next weekend. They're going to put something out called WrestleMania. That much I know.
All right. If if you play any of these games or any retro game that we've ever talked about or not, if you have any fun projects you're doing, if you have any retro comments you have, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net or our Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net or Twitter at RGC Podcast. Thank you, Zach, for curating most of that. We do have no emails, but we do have a few social media feedback items that, and we don't have any emails because we kind of recorded this pretty short after we recorded the last episode.
So we asked about third-party controllers. Was that the question?
Yes.
And there's some love for the ASCII pad, which I have to admit is a great third-party controller. The ASCII pads, I think, are one of the only controllers where the third-party controller is actually better than the original.
I would go with that, yeah.
So I use the Super Nintendo one. I don't have a Mega Drive one, unfortunately. But I do have a Super Nintendo ASCII pad that is great.
Trash Turkey on Facebook just said that he loves all our RetroArch updates. So thanks. You know, I like that feedback because I never know what listeners actually like. So I'll keep the RetroArch and MAME and Launchbox and all those updates coming. So good. I'll be emulating a little bit less because I finally have all my consoles hooked up now, even though my 32X is still displaying in black and white. I still got to fix that. Thank you, Rob from Facebook, for some of your tips. What else do we have here? Oh, I put up on Facebook a poll to see whether our listeners like the NES or Genesis port of Strider better. And it was exactly 50-50.
Okay.
So the battle continues.
I'll break that tie by saying the NES version is more fun.
I voted in it and put NES version, so... all right, so we're at like 51, 49 now. 50.
Perfect. All right, so again, if you want to send us any feedback, email at retrogameclub.net. And thanks again for Ray from Arcade 8... Wait, he called it Arcade 816. I keep calling it 816, so apologies for that. But from Arcade 816... for joining us this week.
Yeah, and thanks everyone for listening.